Well, thanks for having us.
That's hard to watch yourself up there.
I love watching me. me. That's what I like. Oh, gee, that was hard. Golly, what a great crowd. So some of you are friends, engaged, have a special other one with you, and then some of us are married and some engaged, right? I get all that right? Awesome. Our subject is time. And actually, not just time, but I think it's time as it relates to the relationship, if I think we got that correct. So, and also I want to correct something. I mentioned that I was 26 and she was 19 at one point, and that was right. When we met, she was 26, and I mean, I was 26, she was 19. Then we were married a year, 15 or 16 months later. She had gotten a year older, so she was 20 and I was 27. You still tracking with me? But what I wanted to bring up was, what was important in mentioning that, was to say, well, why would she marry a man so much older than her? And the answer was, Lynn worships the very ground that my father struck oil on. And so, sorry, that joke's worked for years.
How many times do you think I've heard that?
Oh, gosh. Sorry, babe, I had to.
Okay, so time.
We've been married 41 years and six of the best years of her life.
Yes.
And so that's what I always say.
So we did, time was important for us because when we were dating, we didn't live anywhere near each other. So trying to have time was really important. So you noticed in the video, we talked about the phone calling.
Yeah, let me interject here, babe. As I said in the video, there were cell phones. When I did my PhD doctoral, I had to type. I had to hire a typist. But this was in like '89. Computers. This was only a few years ago. There was no such thing as a computer that the average person used. If you were Brainiac and IBM, you might have used a computer. So cell phones and everything was a landline. And what happened was I could easily spend $200 or $300 a month just calling her in the afternoon.
Yeah, it was expensive.
Very expensive. So the AT&T had a special deal after 11 o'clock on Sunday night. You could talk like for 10% of the cost, like 10 cents a minute or a nickel a minute, something, whereas normally $1 a minute, literally. So that's really how we began our relationship. And I would say we met in Colorado. We didn't have any time to be together because we were both working on staff at this camp. So my first date with Lynn, I got in the car and I drove exactly 1,000 miles. From my driveway to her driveway, the odometer when I got in her driveway clicked 1,000. And that's how far I drove for the first date. Most of you guys in here cannot top that. Can you?
And I wasn't home.
Yeah, but yeah. Well, I forgot to tell her I was coming. No, I was.
Yeah. Okay, so I think that because we planned ahead a little bit, it's just a little illustration of how important it is to plan ahead to use time wisely. That's really how we built our relationship, because we could have long phone conversations because it didn't cost so much. So, but to understand the importance of time, we want to know first what God has to say about it.
Yeah, here's a couple passages that Lynn and I put together looking at what the Bible says about time, what God says about time. I think it'd be important at least to acknowledge that God does have something to say about time. In James chapter 4, he says this, "Come now, you who say, today or tomorrow, we'll go into such and such." Yeah, what does God have to say about time? "We're going to go to such and such town, spend a year there and trade and make a profit. Yet you don't know what tomorrow will bring. What is your life? For you are a mist that appears for a little time and then vanishes. Instead, you ought to say, if the Lord wills, we will live and do this or do that." And the point of James here is that time is a God thing. And let me tell you, in my opinion, and I'm 69 years old, and it took me probably maybe 30 years to get this. When you're a young person, you really don't see time the way I think the scriptures want us to see time. You should see it just like you've got a phone call from an attorney, and he said your grandparents have passed away, and they've left you something. And I want you to come to my office, and he reads the will, and the will says your grandparents have left you this much. And it's going to be given to you by decree of the will over a course of years. How you spend it's up to you, but it's our wish that you would use it to maximize your life, your love, and make a difference and change the world. So time is like money. You can spend it, you can waste it. By the way, you should waste some money, and you should waste some time, really, and you can invest it. That's how you should see time. And the older you get, you know, when you're, say, 69, and you know, you realize that you don't have a lot of years left, like one foot's in the grave and one foot's on a banana peel, you think, well, any day now, I'm just kidding. God's going to say, this is, your time is sufficient. You've come to the end of your inheritance. It's over. So throughout your life, seeing time as money, a valuable commodity that God's given to you, changes how you handle it, I would hope, because that's what God says. It's how he wants us to do it. If God wills. God gives you the time, and it's, he wants you to use it to invest, to spend, and sometimes waste, because that builds relationships.
So you're right.
Yeah, listen to this. Lynn found this. It's wonderful. A 72-year-old man spends 21 years sleeping, or a 72-year-old woman, 21 years sleeping, 14 years working. I know some of you guys, you don't work that much. 7 years in the bathroom, 6 years eating. I busted that average a long time ago. 6 years in the car, 3 months searching for lost items, most of that toward the end. Six, when you get older like me. Yeah, I lost it, you know. Can't find my shoes. 6 months you'll spend at spotlights, stoplights rather, and 8 months going to junk mail, going through junk mail. And we all average 19 years watching television. Isn't that interesting? Who knows how many hours we spend on a screen. As I said, Lynn and I didn't come up in the particular era where there's screens, lots of screens in our life. We didn't have that. So this is interesting, look at time and how we invest it or waste it or spend it.
And so I like the last line in that. It's not that we don't have enough time, it's what we do with it.
Yeah.
And so he mentioned a lot of things that are necessary to do in life that do take up time. But what does he say about the rest of the time? Ephesians 5 tells us this. Look carefully then how you walk, not as unwise, but as wise, making the best use of the time because the days are evil. And so I think God's saying here, I want you to be good stewards of your time, and that will bless you. It will bless people around you, and it will honor God. And I thought about my friend Ruth. I had a friend named Ruth who's with the Lord now. But she used to tell the story. She was a Christian in a new neighborhood, lonely. She was a real people person, but she didn't know anyone. And so she learned that this woman that jogged past her house every day down the road was a Christian. And so one day Ruth went out in her yard while she was jogging and said, one time when you jog past, why don't you come on in and have a cup of coffee? And this woman neighbor said, I'm much too busy to do that, and ran on her way. And the reason she could tell the story and laugh about it is because eventually they became friends. But I thought it's such a great illustration of someone who doesn't get that God gave you your time to be good stewards of, and maybe look up and see, here's someone who's needy, I need to adjust how I'm using my time to do the right thing there. And I was thinking, you know, no one was busier than Ted. When this church was young and our kids were young, he constantly had things he had to do. But if you had my kids in here today, I don't believe they would say our dad was too busy for us. I don't think they noticed it. And that's because he was a good steward with his time and he made plans beforehand. So when he came home from work, he was there to get dinner with us ready. He was there to eat with the kids. He was there to play with the kids until they went to bed. And then he went back to work, working on the church, working on his doctorate. He was writing sermons. A book at the time, his sermons. But I don't think my kids even knew that. And then for all their games, once they got in middle school and high school, he brought his work with him. But they didn't know that. So he'd watch them, but then when other stuff was going on, he'd be writing or studying. So I think he put their needs in front of his busyness and just was a good steward with his time there, which leads us to the next part. We can't always figure out how to do that. We need God's input to help us.
Yeah, yeah. And I've done, I'm certain I have officiated 400-500 funerals over the years. And I have actually two this week. As the church has grown older, that comes along with the pastoral responsibilities. I bring that up to mention that there are 150 psalms in the Old Testament, 150. Most of them David wrote, but one of them Moses wrote. And Moses predates David by 400 years. And it's Psalm 90. And in Psalm 90, Moses talks about time. Believe it or not, he says, it's given to every man and woman to live 70 years. Man, you can imagine how I feel about that. I'm 69. 1 foot in the grave, 1 foot on a banana peel. But he says, unless God gives you strength. And then he says that, in fact, I've written it down here. So teach us to number our days that we may have a heart of wisdom. Teach us to number our days that we may have a heart of wisdom. And I get two things out of that I talk about whenever I officiate someone's celebration of life and their goodbye. First is we should recalibrate. Let me put it this way. I love beginning of the year goals where you sit down and you say, what do I want to accomplish this year? Here are my goals for my spiritual life, for my marriage, my children, my grandchildren. Why? Because I'm recalibrating that year how to spend what this inheritance God's given me called time. Well, I get that. The second thing in Psalm 90 that you learn is that God should be asked about how you spend your time. You ever even thought about that? Hey, Lord, how should I spend my time this month? Are there some things you want me to do with this investment of time you've given me? That's really, if you're a Christian, that's an important thing. To say, God, what do you want? You'll be amazed at how your time emphasis, your time focus would change if you just said, Lord, what do you want me to do with this time? I've asked him that many times, and you know what answer I get often? Rest. Just rest. I have contaminated more of our vacations by taking work with me. I always sneak my briefcase into the car with books in it. And I can remember we went to Florida one time, and I sat in the back of the car. We had a station wagon way back in the back, and I was reading books for upcoming sermons, and it contaminated everything. And I really felt through some prayer that God said, "You know, hey, don't contaminate the time with your family." So in Psalm 9, he says, "So teach us to number our days that we may gain a heart of wisdom. Recalibrate how you're using your life, and then ask God how he wants you to use your life." That's this whole idea.
And I have to say this, watching Ted, and this happens to me a little bit. Pretty often, somebody comes along that asks Ted to be a part of something or do something. And sometimes he doesn't want to do it because he's too busy. But he does. He asks God. And, you know, usually God says, yeah, you need to be a part of this for a while. And he always does that. He just sort of was a, what do you call it when you're...
Loser?
A buffer. Between two people that are, you were...
Mediator.
A mediator. Yeah. And he just didn't have the time. But it was something God needed him to do, and I love that he did that. Yeah. So how do
we approach time in marriage? That's what this is all about. And speaking of time, we just about blown through all of it.
Yeah, we got
a couple of things quickly I want to put on the screen, I believe. How do we approach time in marriage? First, we have to have the right attitude about this whole idea of time. I hope I've communicated that to you somewhat, to see it differently. It's a commodity. It is should not be treated as a something that is an automatic, you have a right to it, it belongs to you. This morning, a lady came up to me and a husband, and they've got a young 7-year-old daughter, and they just discovered she's incredibly ill. Well, that little 7-year-old daughter may not have a lot of time. We just need to see it as a commodity, which sometimes we can waste, but most of the time we need to invest it or spend it. First, view time as an important gift to give to your spouse. Of that commodity God's given you, some of it belongs to your spouse. You just need to see that, understand that. We aren't really brought up to look at time that way, but once we change our attitude about that, she's important to me. We stop and have time together. We have a date night. I usually call that. We go out and we spend the evening together. We sit and chat often, and it is true, we're both real busy.
But, you know, after 41 years, we've learned what our cadence is, you know, what fits and what doesn't fit, when she needs me to chat and when I need her to chat. And I've learned this, man, if you haven't learned this yet, sometimes if you're not married yet, you haven't learned it yet, but when you get married, your wife wants to tell you stuff and she's venting and you want to fix it, right? But she didn't want it fixed. She just wants to tell you that she's not feeling well, or this person said this, or she's under the load. And I'm
when, saying, well, when I was in college, he used to say, I'm going to punch that teacher in their face. You know, yeah, if yeah. I was complaining about
she'd complain about teaching.
And then I would I don't want you to do that. But then I knew he cared.
Yeah.
So
yeah. Anyway, most of the time they just want to talk, guys. So that's the point of time. Two, recognize that time used correctly is a fertilizer for growing a strong partnership. Men don't realize that, generally speaking. Some sensitive guys do, but I'm not one of those guys. And you just have to say, okay, God's given me this inheritance of time. I should see it not just as money, but as another metaphor, as fertilizer. And when you plant it into the soil of our relationship, it grows good things. Invest some, date nights, sit down and talk with her, time together, him, time together. Three, prioritize making time for each other. Quality time is a result of quantity time. If I had a dollar for every time someone in this church has told me, hey, we're going to spend some quality time together next August, from Tuesday afternoon from 2 to 4:45, we're going to spend some time together. We're going to have 2 hours. It's going to be really quality. By the way, with raising children, it's the same thing. We say, look, we're going to have some quality time together next Saturday afternoon from 10 till 10:30. And we're going to sit down and have quality time. Hogwash. Quality time always comes out of what? Quantity time. You spend the whole day Saturday, you get 30 minutes. It's really rich. That's how it works. To say I'm going to have quality time with my spouse or with my children is really incorrect, because it doesn't happen that way but once every 10 years. It's out of the quality comes quantity, lots of it, comes this moment that's rich. It's golden. It's quality. It's quantity time. Four, plan fun times together to develop a healthy marriage. We vacation together. We drive together. We just got back from the coast. We have friends who have a home on Padre Island, and I enjoy it. We do this every year. We're gone on New Year's Eve because we're down there with our friends who attend our church. And I love, it's 7 hours from here to their home in Padre, and we just stop, get coffee, we talk, we listen to 60s music half the way down there, and we sing, and it's just a marvelous time for us to be together. So, and we stop and shop, and I hate that, but I love her, so get in there and just spend what you want to spend, but hurry.
Lots of those things are awesome, but there are things that you all know stop us from being able to do that. I'm not sure if that's in your notes or not. Wrong priorities. We're usually blind to the fact that our priorities can be wrong, so we're majoring on the minors when the most major things, relationships and people, are suffering. Easy to happen. Busyness. That means you don't control your time. Your time controls you. That's easy to happen. It usually means we've lost some control there. Exhaustion, you know, if we fill every moment of our time, time can be a taskmaster and deplete us. Mm-hmm. It just depletes who we are. Selfishness, we want to hoard time for ourselves. Disorganization, we cannot be creative or assertive with time. If we are spending time trying to clean up messes, get things in order, that takes time. And if we let it get in that bad shape, it's going to hurt the time we need to be spending somewhere else.
Mm-hmm. You forgot that last one there.
I'm not done.
Oh, excuse me. Did you notice me?
Give
how
me
I handle
some
that?
Time.
Did you notice how I handle that, man? Excuse me, honey.
Okay, last one, screens, and I don't need to say anything more about that. I feel sorry sometimes for your generation and the upcoming one, because it's just become such a part of life and we don't even recognize. I've been doing this for an hour and there's my wife or there's my husband. I get it. It's so easy to do. So I think you guys have a doubly hard time in the sense of putting those things away.
By the way, next time you're at a restaurant with your special person, whoever that is, if you're married or not, look around you. Just look around you. And see how many people or eating in a restaurant on a screen. Turn yours off. I guarantee you there's nothing on there that's going to change your world that can't wait.
Yeah.
And by the way, our children are picking up on it. We have grandchildren, a 3.5 and a 14-month-old. The 14-month-old the other day pulls mine out of my pocket, and she already knows what to do just from watching other people.
Yeah, she doesn't have one, but she sees what people do, and she does this on it. Okay, so what are the keys for creating special times together? And let me just say this. Ted and I are not sitting up here thinking, yeah, we've got the answers to this. We made a million mistakes. We still do. But here's the encouragement. The older you get, you do get better at it. If you start working at it at your age, you just get better at it. You get more mature. So it's kind of an encouraging thing. So first of all, be prepared. Have things in order so fun can happen. We're talking about having special times with our special person. You have to have things prepared. So in other words, you can't play a board game together if the board game pieces are all over the house. You can't decide to go out and play tennis if you can't find any tennis balls. I learned early on, if I want to have fun things happen, I need to be prepared and think it through. And then Ted does that for the things he wants to do. We like to play badminton in our backyard because I like to get outside and
do stuff.
She was
on the badminton team in high school.
Yeah, so
did you even know there's a badminton team in the world?
That's pretty funny. But I learned, if I just say to people, hey, let's play badminton, I'll go, yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, well, let's go. Ted, let's play. Sure. I set it up. People come over.
I always know what we're going to do whenever the kids come over for a weekend because it's all set up. Oh, we're going to play badminton. Oh, we're going to play frisbee golf.
Yeah, we're on 6 acres, so I'll set up a frisbee golf course. Because if I say to my son-in-laws or my daughter-in-laws, hey, you guys want to play frisbee golf? Sure. Okay, here's the numbers. Just go make a course. They never do it. So if you think we need some special moments here, I want to create fun, get it set up, and then they will do it. I like to play board games. Ted doesn't. But if it's like an icy day and he can't get out, I've learned he'll play Scrabble with me. So I know where the Scrabble game is. And all the pieces are in it. And I have it ready.
And she always wins.
So that's why I like to play. Okay, so if you guys like puzzles, have a new puzzle out. You get sick of playing. Have a new puzzle on a shelf somewhere. If you like to drive, have your car be clean. If you like to dance, have good music. If you like to cook together, open the fridge and actually have things you could cook in there. That takes preparation and some planning, so know what you and your spouse like to do and have it ready.
Yeah.
Your turn.
Okay. Well, I think in summary, what Lynn just said is so absolutely true. You just have to think ahead of time and prepare, and it will happen. If you don't, I'm repeating her, I know I am, but I want to reemphasize it because I've learned so much from her, watching her do that in our marriage and with our children, and with friends. She'll prepare, and almost 90% of the time, it'll happen. So people will sit down and start playing Parcheesi. So you got the point. Be thoughtful. Make a mundane moment and make it merry. Take a mundane moment and make it a merry moment. Yeah, this is something that we've tried to work at. And I'll confess, Lynn is much better at this than I am. But in the everyday routine life, you know, especially if you're married, life is just, it has a cadence to it. You're up at a certain time, you're doing this, you have your coffee, you know, you're off to work, you dress, you shower, you're gone. You're home at a certain time or all that. So what we do is often, and I have to admit, I hate to dance. Lynn loves to dance. And so often in the kitchen, she'll just grab me and we dance. We just dance. It's weird.
With no music.
Oh, yeah. There's no. Well, we hum. It's just weird. I can't stand it.
Okay, I can talk about this one.
Yeah, sure.
So on Sunday mornings, Ted has to be here really early. I'm usually not up. But when I come in the kitchen, he has created something for me to look at before he leaves that always says, I love you on it. Today, it was a piece of a paper towel with a face on it, and he had taken my glasses and put them over the eyes. And I love that. And that's a mundane moment, waking up. But I know he's thinking about me because he did something fun like that.
Yeah, okay. She's done something since we were married. It's just kind of different. We'll have a date night, and when we get to the door, the back door of the house, or what, which was where we come in, she will say to me almost every time, "I had a wonderful time. Good night." And she'll push me, and then she'll close the door.
And then I lock the door.
Hey, wait a minute. She thinks it's hilarious.
He always forgets I'm going to do it.
Yeah, she thinks it's hilarious. One time we watched this scary movie. It was about, I can't remember what it was about, like the pod monsters or something, but these people. Body snatchers, yeah. People go to sleep, and someone would put a pod next to them, kind of like an okra plant, and it would grow into the person, and then, you
it
know.
It became
don't
the
waste
person.
Your time on it. It became the person. Anyway, so we go to bed that night, and the next morning I wake up, I'm on this side, and I turn over, and there's a pod plant right next to my head. And this okra plant's growing over there. Going,
I had this big okra pot. Yeah. Looked just like it.
Yeah. So.
Okay. Yeah. So take time to smile in the midst of the mundane. That just brings a smile to your face. You know they're thinking about you. Be purposeful. Be a student of your spouse to create memories that they're going to appreciate. The day I cleaned up the garage for Ted was not a good day. Not something he appreciated. You know how you know where everything is and you've got your place. So I
even
was.
Even though it looks messy.
Yeah, I wasn't being a good student. I thought, I'll do this for him. That was a bad idea. It confused him. Yeah.
I appreciate the thought, but the paint that I've been keeping for the last 20 years to match some paint, it was in the dump. Yeah. So I'm looking for the paint, and
So that was not being a student. I remember, too, one night when our kids were young, I would do Sunday night suppers, and I'd say, you get to pick whatever you want for Sunday night, each person. And so I would have that stuff ready, and we'd make it. And I can remember the night Ted said to me, what's my special meal? I never asked him. I never got him anything. And I felt so bad. But I should have been a student of him at that point to realize he was running to the table, and we all had our special meals, and so I changed that. Ted is all about hunting and fishing. Every once in a while, he wants me to go with him, and I go. I go because I'm a student of him, and that means a lot to him. And so I'm there at that time. I know Ted hates waiting in lines at restaurants, so when we have a special night to go out to eat, I always tell him I made reservations, and then he wants to go because he's not going to go stand in a line somewhere. And then when he picks a place to go, he always says he knows where I like, and so he'll pick a place that I like, so we have some good time together. And like he said, I like to play games, so sometimes I can force him to play with me.
Okay, be flexible. Be willing to set aside your agenda for some spontaneous time together. That's the hard part in a marriage, I think, is that spontaneity and being willing to give up your plan because there's a moment there that you could actually be with this person, this special person. Like I mentioned, we stop the shop on the roads, and I make a joke of it, and I'm glad for her. I love for her to shop. I'll sit in the car and read, or sometimes I go in. Like we were in Waco the other day, and I went into Spice with her, and it was just weird. And so putting down my studies for conversation with her, I try to do that as often as I can.
Yeah, and I can tell when, like, Ted's thinking, I do not have 1 second to have this conversation with you, but he'll go, you know, and then he'll look at me, and then he gets into it. But I know that means a lot to me because I know he's super busy, but he's taking the time to do the right thing there.
And often when it's really a busy time and I'd really love to take a nap in the afternoon, on say a Sunday afternoon or say a holiday period when we've been up here all day and then we're at home full of people, in-laws from all over the country, I'd like to take a nap, and often she says, okay, why don't you go take a nap? Or often I say, no, let me carve the turkey.
Yeah, he's exhausted sometimes, and he does it anyway, like on Christmas, because he's been really busy. Be receptive. This is the last one. Appreciate the effort your spouse has displayed for creative time together. It was really neat. Ted really was an example of that this weekend. I got some friends, said we're going to go to dinner and a movie, and I really organized the whole thing. And then when it came time to go, Ted started making little comments about
To drive all the way back into town?
Yeah, why are we doing it like this? Why are we going there? And then he stopped himself and said, this will be fun. Thank you for this effort. that you have made. And I appreciated it so much. And I didn't even have to say anything because he figured out what he was doing. Okay, I thought about another example of, I'm a words person. I was an English teacher. He is not a words person. And our first year of marriage, I wrote like this four-line little romantic poem and taped it by the door because I knew he'd see it when he was leaving to go to work, which he did, but he never mentioned it. But his mom dropped in. She mentioned it. She read it out loud into the house. It was totally humiliating and embarrassing. But my point was, it didn't mean anything to him because it was words, but if I did that now, he would thank me, he would have noticed, he would have said something. That's being receptive to any kind of effort that your spouse makes, just being aware of it. Notice the ways your spouse has decided, I want to bless them with this, and then just appreciate it.
Yeah. So now's the time to take time to bless your special person or your spouse and honor God with what you do with your time. It's a commodity. Invest it well, spend it well, waste it well. Blessings. You want to let them talk a minute?
Okay, everyone is going to turn around to their tables and have about 20 minutes of table talk time led by your coaches. So dig in and have fun. Hey, Avenue. As you're wrapping up your discussions at your tables, we just wanted to let you know that you got 2 seconds left. There you go. 1-0. There you go. Perfect. I love that you all are having discussions, and I don't want to stop them, but I do want to give you all a chance to hear from Ted and Lynn some of the answers that they have to the questions that you've asked, and they're 100% right. We already verified your answers, so. And then after we're done, I don't want you to feel like we're kicking you out of here. You can stick around for as long as you want as you're talking with your tables or with your coaches or other couples, so feel free to stick around. But I wanted to go ahead and get to some of these questions because I thought we don't have time for all of them. We're going to ask two of them that came in. So you ready to jump in?
Sure.
Okay. Bless us with your wisdom. This question asks, how do you practically prioritize time for yourselves and time for those extra needy people in your life? The extra needy, so that could be family or friends or whatever you meant, whoever texted that.
Why are you looking at me? You want me to do it, buddy?
Yeah, you can go.
Well, let me speak to the extra needy people in your life. Because as a pastor, I have that, it's constant. And I love that, but here's what I've learned. I hope this will be some tidbits of wisdom for you. You treat extra needy people in your life, whether it be family or folks in your community, work, like you treat your cell phone and your schedule. That is, you, in my study, I say, I'm gonna answer my emails and I'm gonna return calls from 2 to 2:30. If I tell myself that, then I don't, most of us answer our emails immediately. People have access to you so quickly because you're not willing to. Your curiosity, like the video showed, is so high. So I say, I do the same thing with extra needy people. I say, oh gosh, okay, let's talk. I want to talk with you, but I will call you tomorrow at 2. I've got from 2 to 2:45, and I always put barriers on it, boundaries rather.
Yeah, I think to be in control of the environment helps. Like if they say, can I come over, and there's no end in
so
to
yes,
that.
But tomorrow evening at 7, I'll be free and let's chat and we'll have a whole hour together. And usually it makes them happy and also
or
helps
I go
you.
To their house.
Yes, or I can. And you control that situation. So I hope that helps. Just like you do it, at least I do it at work, I turn the cell phone off or I'm not going to make any phone calls or let any emails come in that I'm going to address until a certain time. You do the same thing with an extra needy person. They get help, they get what they need on your time frame, in your category.
That's so hard for us now with so many different methods of communication and modes and especially if you're type A. Are either of you type A people?
Yeah.
Yeah. Anybody else here type A? Like, that's really, I am. So I want to just reply and get it done and check it off my list. But what that does is it communicates, I'm open to do this now to that person, and it eats up your evening. What would your response be? I'm going to ask a follow-up question, if that's all right, to a couple that comes to you, and maybe this is the husband or the wife, but they're working and they're in a really high-pressure job, and their boss says, you need to be available after 7 p.m. if I call you. Maybe that's a far-fetched example, or maybe that's something that's really happening, but what is your counsel to that couple, and then maybe to that person who has to then go talk to their boss? Do they talk to their boss? What's your advice on that?
Yeah, my first thought is to turn your phone off, you know.
So they can't
They can't reach you.
So they can't reach you, or not.
They might say, I'm going to call you tonight.
Answer it. But if they had a schedule thing, it wouldn't bother me so much.
They'll leave you a voicemail and say you're fired if you don't call me back.
Yeah.
See, I don't know.
That's the fear. So what I also think you do is you communicate with your spouse about that. You say, honey, the boss has been calling, I know, every the night. But I want you to know that we're in a pressure time at work. I'm afraid for my career, my job. Would you give me this good favor of, no matter what circumstances is, when the phone rings, I'm going to go answer it. Is that okay? And she can express, no, it's not okay, but I get it. You're the breadwinner. And then at some point, the pressure will build, and you just need to go talk to your boss and say, hey, for me to stay married, you can't call me.
If it's out of control. Yeah.
That's great. So get on the same page.
Same page.
Before.
And it helps a lot. Yeah. It's just because spouses understand these circumstances.
Yeah. And it's not too late to get on the same page. If this has already happened and it's already caused conflict and confusion in your marriage or your relationship, you can have the conversation and come back. And that's great. So, all right. So this is the next question. We'll move on. I love this because I remember you said this at the very beginning about well-wasted time. This person says, what does time well-wasted look like in real life?
I think I mentioned that, didn't I?
Yeah.
Really wasting time is a perception. It's not reality. It's not truth. The truth is you're investing. But in your own mind and your own experience, and maybe other people's, the word wasting may come on the screen there. But it's really, and here's how you do this, in my opinion. First, you need to know yourself well enough to know what rejuvenates you, what refreshes you, what would make a difference, and let yourself do that. For instance, I live in some senses for time that I can do what I want to do. Someone's always doing this or that, the family or the church, and they need me for whatever. And I'm gratified to do that. That's my calling in life. It's a blessing. But sometimes I live just to be able to say, okay, today, Monday, this is my day, and I'm going to Lowe's. And I'm just going to walk up down Lowe's. I'm not going to shave. I'm going to have a hat on. I'm just going to walk up and down. Literally, that's literally it. That's my day. And I go, wow, I feel so refreshed. Oh, I don't need a screwdriver. I just want to go to Lowe's. Or I go to the coffee shop by myself with a book, and nobody bothers me. And so it's not really wasted time, but it's time I've spent to refresh myself. And first, you got to know yourself. What does that for you? Could be a nap. Could be some time away. Some people are rejuvenated by people. Could be you want to be with somebody new, somebody to chat with. You want to go to a movie. But that's what I meant by wasted time. It's really not wasted, but your perception is, and others may perceive, just wasting a whole day. No, I'm not.
You linked that with money earlier. You said it's kind of like a currency. Can you say that again, what you said?
Well, I think we should see time as a currency. That our grandparents leave us, God, and we can invest it like you were doing today. You're investing time today, being here, hopefully learning something and chatting around the tables. You can spend it. You can invest it, which means it's long-term for your relationship. You can spend it, which means you're buying something with your time. You're buying, many things. Or you can waste it, which is the last point. Perception is that you're just throwing it away. In time, with this commodity called time, there's situations where we need to waste it. Can I answer your question?
Another facet of that is Ted used to do this a lot because he is type A, and like you have your list. So he'd have his list and head out the door.
I'm triple A.
And then he'd come home and sit down and say, it was just a waste.
Gosh,
you know, I didn't get any of this done. I'd say, well, what did you do? Well, this couple was going to divorce. I met with them, and then somebody came in that needed money, so I went and got money for it. And so his perception, I would say every time, it was not a waste of day.
Yeah.
And he would have to rethink. I didn't get my agenda done, But that was not a wasted day.
What you got to do is you got to write it on the list after it happens. That's
right. Yeah. Cross,
oh, yeah.
Cross it off.
It feels so
brother
good.
In Christ. We're,
poor
we're
Jessica.
Yeah. I've had that many times. Today I did this. I did that. I put out this fire. I did that. I helped these people. I did this wedding. I did that. And the whole day was wasted. Because I didn't get to do what I wanted to do. That's right. But she said, well, so what is ministry? Let me remind me, what does it mean to be a pastor? She said that to me before. Oh, gee.
And you know what I found? What I found, too, is if somebody that's needy just pops up into your life, if you do have to set those parameters, but if you just pray to God and step into it, He's going to bless you somehow. He's going to help you with that time. He's going to renew some other area in your life. So you don't want to be so set on your deal that you say no to these things God's sending people your way for ministry. So you have to really have a balance.
Yeah, that's cool.
He does give time back to you.
Yeah.
He does.
Just like, finances again, we tell people, you know, invest your money in the kingdom and God will take care of you.
Yeah.
I mean, not that that's why you do it, but but that happens. He takes care of those who invest well. And so it's the same thing with time, people that worry about the amount of time they're spending on something that God is in and God is calling them, but they don't want to spend that time. Spend the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He'll take care of it.
But it's a lifelong struggle too. You know, it is. And I say that positive and not negative in the sense that you, like Psalm 90, Moses writes, recalibrate how you're using your time, is how God wants you to use your time. See it as a commodity. You can spend it, you can invest it, you can waste it, but do something with it rather than to say, I live and this is just life. I'm walking through life just
without purpose.
Without purpose. And it just, that's a waste of time.
Well, thank you for wasting your time with
us
today,
Tim. Glad to waste
it
with you.
It was really great. You all thank them with a warm round of applause. Thank you so much.
Thank you.